this piece of property. They're currently asserting that they don't know exactly what they're going to do, but they expect probably some housing and some marine-related kinds of projects, like the things that are going out there now, along Marine Lab and that type thing. And we were very concerned that somehow if they could slip through, put a big project in there and not have to go through environmental review, that would really be outrageous. So our suit was basically forcing them to agree before the deadline ran out that they would in fact do that kind of environmental review on whatever it is they have in mind.
How long will that environmental review take?
At this point they don't even know what they're doing, so I'm expecting a couple year process before we'll even be looking at an actual concrete proposal. And again, what we didn't want was that the window of opportunity to sort of force them into agreeing to do environmental review on what their plans are to pass by us. And so in a very little tight window here between last Tuesday and this, it'll actually be Friday, 5 o'clock when we have to have action. And the university sent us a letter in response to our threatened lawsuit that, in which they agreed formally that they would undergo full EIR environmental review of any
projects.
But they're
still putting up the damn parking structure anyway, right?
That's a different suit. That's a different question.
Well, let's get
down to... I made a joke, actually. I can't reveal what goes on in closed sessions, but I think this is of so little substance, I'll say this comment.
I'm so calling the DA.
How come you weren't able to get them to throw in the parking garage, too? I think it's a very unrelated issue in some way. Although only related in the sense that they're both environmental questions, primarily.
They're both involved in what people regard as university arrogance, I guess.
Yes, I think that's fair.
Yeah. Well, of course, the subject that you and I are most familiar with, and at least I'm most familiar with, has to do with issues around civil rights for people who are outside, people who are either homeless or living outside for different reasons. And this is something that we've talked about on many an occasion, and I guess as recently as, was it last week? I think you came in briefly for 20 minutes or 40 minutes or something like that.
It was either last week or the week before.
Or the week before.
The time just flies when you're having fun.
Oh, yeah. Well, you look like you're having fun tonight, Mike. I think you're pleased about
I enjoy public life. There's no question about it.
Indeed. So we have with us Councilmember Mike Rodkin. I'm going to begin this discussion by fulfilling a promise I made to you a week ago when we actually talked about the issue on campus at a forum where you faced four opponents on the issue. Single-handedly, I understand that the moderator tried to get some downtown merchants and downtown residents, but they didn't want to appear, though they don't mind writing nasty letters on the subject to the city council. Apparently, they don't want to be in public, and maybe they're afraid of being having their business is targeted. That's what at least Neil Coonerty always used to say. But in any case, one of the issues that came up during the course of the task force to examine the camping ordinance was the issue of the magnet theory. And the magnet theory you've made is, of course, the theory that if you, let's say, loosen the laws regarding the restrictions against sleeping, that this is going to result in an influx of people to come to the area. And indeed, it certainly has a common sense plausibility. That is to say, you might think, well, you know, if the prices are cheaper, people will come to the store with the cheaper goods or something to that effect.
Or if you make something available that people want that they can't get anywhere else, they'll flow to it. Yes,
right.
That's the argument.
There you go. And of course, the issue is can be looked at in terms of different arenas. If more social services are provided, people will come to use them. Or if the laws against sleeping are lifted in certain areas of the city, let's say, this will make it easier or more attractive to people to come. So
that's a fair statement of what I think, what I would describe as the magnet theory. I will say you can carry any argument to a logical absurdity, and certainly you could take this argument to say that the city should provide no services for homeless people because every time you provide any service, it's likely to draw people.
I
do believe that the services we currently provide may draw a small number of people in addition to the folks that otherwise would be here who are homeless, but I don't think it has a dramatic effect because many other communities provide some level of services for the homeless. And so I've always resisted the idea that simply by providing shelter for people or meals or health care access or a whole range of other kinds of services that will inevitably bring large numbers of people here. I do think that the issue of sleeping outdoors is a somewhat special case in that there's really no place else in the country where people are allowed to sleep outdoors.
Don't say in the country, because I think unless you wish to dispute the text of the Pottinger settlement in Miami, and perhaps you do, and I'd like to hear if you do, it is legal for people to sleep outdoors unless there are shelter beds available in the city of Miami. I take it you don't dispute that.
No, that's the law. I do, what I would say, having now talked both to people in Broward County, which is next to Dade County, where mm-hmm. Miami exists, mm-hmm. it's north of Dade County, and talking to people in Miami, that in fact, the officers, police officers in that community are still enforcing against people sleeping outdoors on the theory that there are adequate indoor shelters. Now, whether anybody, same situation as here, many people sleep outdoors in Santa Cruz and don't get caught, and nobody, you know, enforces anything against them, but in fact, officers in Dade County and in Miami continue to arrest people for sleeping outdoors under various kinds of charges of one sort or another. They don't have
advised Dade County is a separate case than Miami.
Dade County is the county that Miami, Florida sits
in. Right. Broward is a different
north,
county than Miami. So we're talking about Miami.
I did part of my VISTA service in Broward, so I know the area. I was in mm-hmm. Pompano Beach for part of the time in 1965 and 1966, so I know the area fairly well.
Thank you. Uh-huh.
Becky just brought
some. Let's then turn to.
I appreciate it.
Let's turn to what new information you found. Who did you speak with, or what groups did you speak with in Dade County or Miami?
I spoke to someone who represented themselves to be a social service official for the city of Miami, and I talked to a city council member in Miami. And I tried to contact a person, or several people actually, from the county in Dade County, was unable to get anybody who would...
This was recently in the last week or so?
In the last week for mm-hmm. those calls. Broward County people I called about 2 weeks ago now, mm-hmm. or a week and a half ago, talking about these issues. And Broward County, Robert had raised this before, used to have... people sleeping outdoors, and then began to enforce against it severely. They had a lot of people there. They had an outdoor campground for a number of years.
5 years.
In response, this was before the decision in Dade County affecting this issue.
Really?
And
I thought it was after. And I thought they formed the campground in 93, is what I'd heard.
So maybe I have the dates.
And Pottinger was in 92.
So
Pottinger
was after
in
that
Miami.
Case.
Yeah.
In any case, people were sleeping outdoors in a selected area. There was a particular area that was identified as an okay, safe area to sleep. Or a legal area to sleep, and I don't know whether it was safe or not, but a legal area to sleep. And then they opened up a shelter with 200 beds and decided that now that they had a place for people to sleep indoors, they no longer needed to provide an outdoor shelter. And as I pointed out in the debate that Robert and I had up at the university last week, a certain irony in this is that the Broward County, which has a population of 1.5 million people, providing a shelter with 200 beds, the city of Santa Cruz, and let's say northern Santa Cruz County, which has a population of something closer in the range of about 100, 120,000 people in the northern part of the county, has at least a 200 shelter bed in the wintertime, and in the summer, many less beds. But the notion that they had enough beds for all of their homeless makes
ridiculous.
It not a very good model for Robert or others to sort of point to us about what we ought to be following or where we ought to be going.
I don't want to clarify this. I'm not proposing their social services model as anything for us to follow. Although, I heard from Broward County social service providers, not official ones, in this, probably not the same ones you talked to. I think I talked to several... They weren't actually civil libertarians. They were people with, I guess people with, one person was with the shelter, head of the shelter or on the shelter committee.
You had a quote once. I think that's who it was, because once, at least in one leaflet you passed out, you had a reference to a person that worked on a shelter, a staff of some kind.
Right. He pointed out that there had been actually, and I interviewed him at length for this show, and we played that interview on the air, that the fact that there was a tent city for 5 years, and the reason it was a tent city was pointed out by, I guess, other advocates, was because they wanted to be able to arrest people who were in parks after dark, and they feared that they would not be able to do that unless they had a legal place to send people to go, and so they established the tent city. They hadn't been ordered to do this by the court,
they didn't share that with me when I called.
Sorry?
They didn't share that with me when I called.
Right,
but
yeah,
that may well be the case.
That's what I was told.
I don't doubt it. I wasn't trying to suggest
right, no.
that on your
sure, I understand. The point I was making was that it was a pretext. It was an excuse to be able to close the parks. They set up this tent city, and they kept it going for 5 years. They feared a huge lawsuit, as indeed was ultimately successful in Miami, a $1.5 million settlement. And so instead, they funded apparently what was a cheaper, I would assume it was a cheaper alternative, although I'm not sure. I don't know how much the expenses were to run a campground. I guess it was 200 or 300 people, or 100 or 200 people. I'm not quite sure how many people.
I think it was a maximum of 200, but
that's what it was.
Sure,
I know that kind of
that's what it was.
It went back and forth. I think it also involved a somewhat more lenient policy of people who even didn't make it into the campground, because, as you pointed out, that didn't in any way cover the needs of the city. The reason, of course, we're talking about this example is that I have frequently denounced your arguments when I feel that you're kind of blithely and glibly stating something that just isn't true. And so when you said, no place in the country can they sleep legally, I wanted to point out to you that, Broward has changed.
Yes,
and they closed their campground.
No longer legal,
but Miami has not changed in terms of the settlement. Now, you can say police are indeed enforcing.
Now we're back to the situation, which was, for example, in San Francisco, where...
Let me finish my sentence first.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's okay. Police are, indeed may be violating the Pottinger settlement. They may be violating the law, and they may be abrogating the rights of homeless people to sleep. And that may be happening. But, in fact, it is true that, in terms of the law, it is legal to sleep in Miami. So I would hope that in our next debate publicly, you would acknowledge that is the case, that indeed, if police are violating the law, perhaps they should be called to account.
Well, Robert, let me give you what has been my consistent position on this question.
All right.
I don't think the situation in Miami is any different, in practice, in reality, than the situation in Santa Cruz, which is there are many places in Dade County where you can sleep outdoors and nobody will bother you. And Dade County is a much bigger place. It has many more rural areas as well as more urban areas than we do here. It's a big, very big county. And people sleep outdoors in those places, just as in Santa Cruz. There are many places where people sleep outdoors, are not bothered by anybody. Nobody files a complaint. The police don't come out and bother you. Many places in the woods and so forth where people sleep, and even on the streets of Santa Cruz. However, there are many places without a law in Dade County where the police, in fact, find some pretext for moving people on, for ticketing people with other kinds of offenses and so forth. The only thing that's different between us is that in the city of Santa Cruz, when the police do that, they do it under the cover of law. They don't make up the law themselves. They don't find trumped up charges.
I don't know about
they
that.
Don't find false and trumped up charges misdirected charges.
That's not been my experience.
In general, police may arrest people for other issues as well, but in fact, we have a law that says you can't sleep outdoors. But to represent that in Miami, for example, people can just sleep outdoors if they want is not the case, and if that's what you're representing. And as far as I know, there's no designated safe areas in Dade County where say, oh, here's an okay place to sleep. What they've said is it's not against the law in general to sleep outdoors. But in fact, there are many, many places in Miami, in the city, and in the county, in Dade County, apparently, according to these people I spoke with, where people are basically will be in trouble with the law, even though there is no law about that issue, if they sleep outdoors.
Yeah, but
so my initial comment that there's no place in the country where you can sort of sleep outdoors and not face legal sanctions, or whether legal or illegal, but face sanctions by law enforcement officers, I still stand by that statement.
Well, I think we have problems with hate crimes in different areas all over, and discrimination against different classes of people wherever you go, and I think that's probably going to be true in Miami in spite of the settlements that, in spite of Clyde Atkins' decision in 1992, the Pottinger decision, and the 1998 Pottinger settlement, which states that you cannot be arrested for a life-sustaining misdemeanor, such as even building a fire or even taking a piss, unless there's a shelter bed available. I think that it may be true if you say in practice that police are violating that, but I think that the principle that is being expressed here is a good one and an important one. And I guess you might say that I'm moving here into a slightly different area.
Well, let me make a quick point before you move on, just to make the point I'm trying to make. When Willie Brown in San Francisco said, oh, it's, we think it's people should be allowed to sleep outdoors, et cetera, which he made a very bold statement about how he was
really,
going to
he
was going
he
to
said
first
that?
Got, he first got elected, and you made a big point of it to us.
I never heard him say that.
A leaflet that I still have in which you said we should follow the bold lead of Willie Brown in overturning Jordan, I guess the guy's name was, who was mayor before.
Matrix crimes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we should, that the city of Santa Cruz should follow the bold move of Willie Brown and sort of now making it legal for people to sleep outdoors in the parks. He said he made a bold policy statement, but in fact
he
told the police officers
right, he didn't
in San
do that.
Francisco
he didn't do that.
To go ahead and keep arresting people.
Brown has been worse than Jordan, but what he did do, actually what his district attorney did, was his district attorney dismissed 40,000 sleeping ban type citations.
Those may be past cases, but the point is they continue.
Very significant. I suggested the same thing to you, Michael, when you were mayor in 1996, and you declined to do that.
Robert, they continue to give people new citations, and in fact, what I hope you're not doing, I don't believe you're quite, I'm sure this is not your intention, but one could misread it to say that what you're doing is trying to enshrine the principle of hypocrisy. We should boldly remove our camping ban and then find sneaky
ways. You're slipping slightly to a side issue, Mike. You're slipping slightly to a side issue because that flyer that you're referring to talked about the practice that he'd already done initially. We're talking about March of 96 when we didn't know what Brown's policy was. And when, in fact, his district attorney, as I said, had at least given amnesty or for 40,000 past citations. We asked you to do the same. You refused to even consider this as a possibility. I remember a lengthy interview with you. Let me finish.
Okay.
Just a moment. And it is true that in the months that followed, Brown showed that he was worse than Jordan. So what I was telling you was that there are certain the initial indications were that he was going to be better, and indeed the initial actions by his district attorney. And we are saying to you, because you are a man who, to some extent, in some areas, has been on the cutting edge of certain social issues. I cite for you your Tuesday resolution to stop the bombing in former Yugoslavia, as you call it, Yugoslavia as the rest of us call it, but in that area. And I think that is, you know, a very well put together resolution. You got a lot of, I think, well-deserved support for that resolution. I think that if you could take a similar position in terms of defending the basic civil rights of homeless people here in Santa Cruz, it would be a marvelous conversion. And I personally would
are you looking for, see yourself as John the Baptist?
I'm getting down on my knees here. Particularly at this time, Mike, because I mean as you probably didn't hear Lou and I talking earlier, but as you know, there was this troll busting the tax on homeless people kind of get together.
I, as you well know,
of course,
any reasonable person that feels outraged by and would do whatever.
It would be hard for you to say otherwise. I mean, let's be honest.
But would I? Do you, I mean, I'm sure you don't believe that I think that it's appropriate for people to be out there beating homeless people. I don't.
No.
I've spoken out against it forcefully.
No, but on the other hand, you have not. You don't. You do not take the obvious, at least temporary solution, which is to set up a safe zone where people can go. That is to say, I mean, or at least you haven't yet. I would like to hear you come out for that. Whether it be a warehouse, whether it be a gymnasium open during the summer because students are gone, whether it be a part of the park where they have to be gone by dawn, whatever, where people can sleep at night at least until some of these cases are solved and these people are picked up. Because it's not just the two cases that have crossed Sergeant Clark's desk. We are talking at least, I feel, 15 cases of beatings and threats that continue against homeless people. And you might say, well, I certainly don't support that, but if you refuse to establish a safe zone and you have the power, I say that by default you support that.
And my view is that having a safe place for people to sleep, no matter how large we make it in Santa Cruz County, will not house all the people that want to sleep outdoors. Many will not want to be part of that.
You can save some.
And there will still be idiots out there and outrageously, I can't come up with enough negative terms on the radio.
Brutal thugs
mm-hmm. out there and mindless idiots who will still...
But some people will escape
kind of
that violence. Some people will escape that violence.
But I don't think that the solution to these problems, either the beating of people or meeting the needs of homeless people, are best solved by finding ways for people to be able to sleep outdoors. I think we need to provide more social... We disagree on this. I think we need to find ways to provide more social services.
This sounds so much... I've heard this so many times,
and
Mike.
Of course,
in the meantime, while you're looking for these social services, while you're looking for good shelters, affordable housing, while you're seeking all these things that we all want, what about some kind of a safety zone?
Well, the problem we always have, and this is what I throw back at you from this, is where is that place supposed to be? When you get to concrete cases, as has been now the discovery of virtually every...
I suppose I give you 10 possible places. How about that? How about 10 places
for you? Let me just finish.
I'll name them.
Every city council member who's been elected to public office, many of whom you've probably shared in the abstract your views about this question, and go back to Don Lane, Jane Yokoyama, people in the 1990. You go to the most current council members elected in 1998. These folks come into office thinking, well, there's, you know, sure, that sounds reasonable. We ought to be able to find a place for people to sleep. And I'll throw it back at you. Name, don't pick 10 places. Pick one.
Sure.
Pick one at a time.
Start at Sycamore Grove.
Name the place.
That's the one that Jane...
And then when you make your proposal, bring that before the public and see what happens.
Sure.
Sycamore Grove, the environmentalists in this town who run this town will skin you alive.
Some of them, although I've talked to Parks and Rec officials recently, not officials, actually rangers, and they feel that's a very good place. And I've asked them, don't you think it would do damage to the environment? They said, no, not if it's properly done. And I said,
we did go through a complete environmental review, and this is not even about the homeless issue. We went through an environmental review of the Poganip.
I know, about bikes and horses and such.
No, many of us were proposing that there should be some kind of a camping area or an RV park or some kind of a, and this was not, again, having nothing particularly to do with the homeless.
The homeless, yeah.
And in the middle of that environmental review, that got thrashed, or that would destroy the environmental quality of the area. And I actually disagreed with them, and I don't know that that's a bad place to put homeless people, but there's a political process. You bring these things forward, and then you've got to deal with what the public says about it.
I can assure you that if you came out tomorrow for Sycamore Grove as a homeless campground, we would have it within 2 months. I see no question that if you as a council member came out for that, we would have it. I think it would draw buyers and the majority along immediately. You are regarded as the grand old man of the sleeping band. I mean, let's face it, Mike.
That's a funny phrase. Excuse me for laughing.
Certainly.
I wasn't laughing at your
That's okay.
Wasn't it you?
That's right. Now, I really think that, and I'm not saying that because, I mean, we know that the majority that you are associated with in some circles has lost the election in November, but nonetheless, you know, you're an articulate, able spokesman, and we can see that you put together a resolution that could command a unanimity in the city council very quickly and with great ease. Well, not how much ease, but I mean, I imagine you worked on that thing, but it looked pretty good to me,
But I don't take tickets on myself about that. I mean, I think that resolution, its time had come.
Definitely. Time came 8 weeks ago.
And I feel, you know, proud of having done
it. We're talking, by the way, about the resolution to stop the bombing of Yugoslavia.
Yes. And... Louis, you should come to the microphone because they can't hear you that far away.
Now, wait a minute. We're talking about the sleeping ban here. You're talking about the sleeping ban, Lou? I don't want to get into Yugoslavia.
I'm talking about alternatives to what you have now,
okay,
which is the sleeping ban.
Go ahead.
Most of the people that I know in the Santa Cruz area that are sleeping out illegally, because they don't have enough shelter places, And sure, some of them will never use a shelter, but very, very few of them are from the PCH Freeway Bridge? It's Pacific Coast Highway is what I used to know it as.
Highway 1?
Yeah. Uh-huh. A highway going bridge up to along the river there at the Paradise Cove.
Paradise Park?
Paradise Park, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Paradise Park.
Right.
All right, now, there's quite a few people utilize this as a place to sleep, camp.
Mm-hmm.
All right, now, this is not endangering them by me saying this, because it's common knowledge for the police and everybody else. All right, now, and up on the railroad track above, yeah.
So what is your suggestion, Lou?
Allow them to stay there. You know, wait a minute.
So
I understand environmental issues.
Down in those areas.
Yeah. Allow them to stay there.
So are those areas within the city is, I guess, the first question we'd have to ask, because Mike is a city official.
Well, I understand they are.
Oh, well then.
They're served by the city bus.
Maybe you should pass the mic to Mike and see what he says. These are
not unreasonable requests, because they're already being utilized, and sure, the environment is important, but it's such a playground, such a heaven there.
Wouldn't hundreds of people come to Santa Cruz to sleep there?
I mean, no, they won't.
Oh, come on. But there'd be a magnet. Everyone would come.
If everything was joyous and free in Santa Cruz, you might have a rush on the place like in the 60s of the free love people in San Francisco, but it's not there no more. You understand?
You mean our heyday is gone? What are you saying?
Hopefully it is, because a lot of other places are addressing these same issues. You know, I've been in Brevard and Dade since either one of y'all have.
Broward County.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Brevard.
Broward.
Well, they're all, they're all it's quite who you talk to down there.
Yeah, it's Broward, though.
Yeah, he says he's one of the most people that live there. Since.
Yeah,
oh, really?
Because I was there in June of last year.
Oh, really?
Yes. Yeah. And they have a lot of problems. Mm-hmm. They have a lot of problems.
Well, was there a big effect? Did everybody come to town once the campground opened?
No. Nobody comes to town down there in the Palm Beach area and in Fort Lauderdale area unless
that's what the task force on the camping ordinance found, that there was no magnet effect in areas like Santa Barbara and Broward County and so forth.
A lot of people want to go to Florida for any reason.
It doesn't mean there couldn't be such a magnet effect in Santa Cruz. I'm not saying that. But we have to look at
people usually go places where they can get employment and make more money.
Right.
That's usually why people locate in different places.
So the way to make sure people don't come to town is to make sure there are no employment opportunities.
Well, there are employment opportunities here for anybody.
I agree with you, Lou.
But,
I think that's true.
These things that are being currently utilized, you know, could be allowed to be utilized. You know, as a safe haven. Yes, the environment may suffer, but the people are already suffering, and people are part of the environment. I don't care whether you live up on the hill.
But they're expendable, as we can see in Yugoslavia. I mean, there are too many people.
Well, look, I'm gonna tell you something about Yugoslavia. Now you can say what you want to, but the last time something flared up in that area, it cost 50 million lives.
You're talking about World War II?
Yes,
Are you talking about World War I? That was even worse.
No. World War II had more loss of life than World War I.
Yeah, World War I just looked so messy with all those trenches.
Well, mechanization and stuff made the World War II a little more atrocious.
But what about the war on the poor? Let's get back to that.
So far, there's not a declared one.
No. Well, waiting for...
But
it would be inappropriate to declare
a
war.
Well, poverty is the biggest crime. All right, now, I don't care how you look at it, but poverty makes
people...
Listen,
this county, this city is doing everything it can for homeless people. I mean, per capita, I've heard this from a council member, that we spend more per capita than many a city, than most California cities.
Well, that may very well be true. That may very well be true, but in all reality is when this shelter up here, the Homeless Resources Center, cut back the... interfaith satellite shelter program to the minimum that they have now, down in the south part of this county, it was brought to my knowledge that they have at least 50 beds there not being filled. They did not cut their program.
Really?
Yes. Hmm. And this was from a person that is a social worker that told me this. So I don't think she told me bad information. It may not be exact, but she told me that, you know, there are beds available down there. Shelter. All right. Now, as far as war...
Now, wait a minute. Let's get back to
the
same thing.
War on people in this country. But, you know, if you got people out here hunting a prey, that is war.
You're talking about the people seeking homeless people
troll
and beating
busters,
them up.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not troll busting. That's hunting a prey,
You are a homeless person yourself.
Yes.
And you, what is your suggestion to Councilmember Rotkin? He doesn't feel he can recommend opening, at least if I understand properly, opening up a safe area because he fears that's the wrong solution. What we need are better medical services.
All right,
I'll
say this. Now, y'all can take it any way you want to. Mm-hmm. All right, now, set a number. If you're afraid of a magnet effect, set a number to where if you open up a place, say for 200 people, and you got 500 people there within 6 months, you know it's a magnet effect.
Or there's a depression or something.
Then close it. You know, because no community should have to bear the burden alone. And that's reasonable.
What do you think? You want to pass the mic to him and see what he thinks of that idea?
I want to suggest one more thing about this and then I'll sit down. Is, you know, every time we were going to the armory over here by Denny's, there was a little small billboard plaque there that shows the sister cities of Santa Cruz. And you know, that's great. Because, yeah, International Sister Cities are a great program. My hometown had it. It's effective, and it's not high in cost, and you benefit from knowing these places. Why not use that same Sister City program, not with international communities, but on the homeless issue with people in this country that are facing this thing? And I'll suggest Savannah, Georgia, because it's on the coast.
And how would you suggest this work? How would the sister cities operate?
Find out how each one's handling their problems.
And informational exchange?
Yes, indeed. It'd be just as probably less costly than international.
Okay.
Because of the communication. The communication in the United States through fax, phone, and
I prefer to send
mail.
The city council to the city. Maybe we can get, you know, a new city council and,
No. You don't throw out the baby with the bathwater. I don't give a damn what your
position
is.
These people are not babies.
Well,
I gotta tell you.
I don't care who they are. They're concerned citizens, or they wouldn't be in the position they are. And citizens put them in the position they are.
Some citizens did, yes.
Citizens?
Yes.
You know, you got the right to say no just as well as you have the right to say yes. Citizens put these people in charge. And if you're going to blame anybody, blame the citizens.
Well, I will blame a number of things, but I hear you. I hear you.
Lou. Anybody. This is a democracy, you know. If you don't believe in the vote, don't use it.
Mm.
But if you believe in the vote, you know, and the vote is most powerful.
You promised to let Mike answer your proposal about opening up the area.
I sure will, and here it is, Mike.
What do you think, Mike?
Thanks, Lou. Well, I guess going back to the general, thank Lou for his comments, and suggestion. The general theory of the magnet theory, as Roberts defined it, I don't think I'm the one that came up with that term, but it's not an inaccurate way to describe what my point is best measured against a real situation that we had here in Santa Cruz County rather than abstractions in other places. And I'll let Robert respond, so hope he'll let me get it out, and then I'll stop, and I'll try and make it short to the point. We had a situation at Highway 1 and Highway 9 where the new shelter.
Coral Street Open Air Shelter.
No, well, yes, which is called the Coral Street Open Air Shelter, where there's currently now another closed
community
shelter. Community house exists. Mm-hmm. And in that area, for a number of years, this was land that was owned by a nonprofit group that currently runs the community house, and
Citizens
it's now merged
Committee for,
the Committee for the Homeless, which is now merged with the Homeless Resource Center. Mm-hmm. And they own this piece of land, and while they did not have a thing built on it, they were letting people sleep there. There was never any sort of organized program, but they looked the other way.
Extremely disorganized program.
Fair way to say, they looked the other way while people camped out there. And for a number of summers, at least two, there were about roughly 80 people or so that slept in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked reasonably well, and it's, you know, many people, of course, would not like to sleep under those conditions, but 80 people apparently found that was a better place to sleep than elsewhere. And then in the third year, the third summer that went on.
Actually, it was the second summer, I think?
It was the third, actually, when you actually look at the... It's not summers, but third year, because the first year was really taking place in the autumn.
It was
really
permitted in 94. It wasn't permitted in 95, and it ended in 95 in December.
Well, there were at least two summers that people slept out there. I do know that for a fact. And,
yes.
And in the... It was a fall, followed by a summer, followed by another summer. So it was almost... It was at least three seasons, if not three full summers. And in the third year, for a number of reasons that I don't, you know, claim to fully know the answer for it, about 200 people filled that area. It got much more crowded than it had been before. There were a number of serious problems, and I won't go into them in great detail because it's not to the main point here, but it was too many people for that area. People were crowded in much too tightly, and we started to hear complaints as city council members. People came to our public meetings and privately through phone calls and other ways communicated that there was violence going on there, that the homeless people were, you know, stealing stuff from each other. Not all homeless people, let me be clear about that. Some of the people who were there were stealing stuff from other homeless people. There were some beatings going on, some other problems. I don't believe they were beatings at the vicious level that were, you know, seen with these vigilantes, but it was not a particularly welcoming or safe place for everybody who was there. So the city council got concerned about that issue. Clearly, again, there were more people than that particular site could possibly hold. It got overcrowded. There were other than problems that flowed from that. The rains came. It's a very fairly low-lying area, and the area became partly flooded and made it more difficult for people to sleep there. One of the porta potties overflowed for reasons I don't fully understand, but it was there.
CCH incompetence.
That could be for whatever reason. It was there were problems there, and way too many people came to the area. And at that point, people who own the property, for two reasons, I believe, although I can't speak for them, but my sense of what they said publicly, my summary of what they said on a number of different occasions, they felt that the thing was, quote, out of control, unquote, that it no longer was a particularly safe place to be. They could no longer look the other way. They were getting blamed for the problems that were happening there. And I think they were worried that somehow there was...
Let me interrupt you just for a moment. I'm going to allow you to finish.
In a sentence, and then you make your points.
Okay, but I want you to be able to go on. I just want to make comment on something that briefly you're saying.
Then make your point. So just to finish up in 30 seconds, they basically decided that they no longer wanted to look the other way, and they decided that they would basically remove the people from the site, which they did. And to me, that's the magnet theory at work. It's a place that was worked when there were 80 people there. The city council looked the other way. The property owners looked the other way. Some citizens complained about it all that time. We got calls, what are you letting those bums sleep out there and so forth. City council decided this seems to be a place where people are safe. It's working reasonably well. We'll look the other way. When it got overcrowded, it was no longer a solution, and the thing got closed down by the property owners, and the city council supported that, I think, ultimately, by the police helped close it down.
Let's talk about it.
And so my conclusion is, there's the example of the magnet theory at work. If you let people sleep outdoors, it is a place where it didn't work because too many people came to hold the number of people that came
Let's
there.
Let's discuss that.
And that's my answer to Lou's suggestion, which is where this started,
right,
to why, if you let people sleep up along the railroad tracks, I believe the same thing would happen.
Let's talk about that particular case. No, I mean, this is important. I think that we have to start distinguishing, as you often do, between the summer, the fall, and the winter. So, for instance, one of the reasons that there wasn't a lot of people there during the winter, let's say, of 91, 92, 92, 93, 93, 94, 94, 95, and there was in the winter of 95, 96, had to do with the fact that homeless people organized in the winter of 95, 96. That is to say, come November, when there was a lot of talk about, the mayor of the town, I guess, was Catherine Byers right before you in 95, I believe it was. You became mayor in 96, and I think right before you was Catherine. And it was, because it was the same year that there was... It was the same year when there was a proposal that to change the downtown ordinances for a system of mediation. Catherine Byers had a couple of mediators come to town and looked at everybody. Well, I'm pointing out the sort of the background in the situation. Every other year, the Citizens Committee for the Homeless called the police and moved everybody else off the property in October. That's what they did historically. This year, in 95, they didn't. And, of course, more people came because the weather was getting worse and there were problems. I mean, people needed a place to be. And also, it was a place where you could leave your stuff during the day. They allowed tents to remain up, which I think actually is a good idea, not a bad idea, because it gave a place where people could leave their dogs during the day, they could go off and work and come back. And indeed, you had all the problems that are associated with homeless encampments. I mean, some people use drugs, some people drink, you're going to have occasional instances of violence, but it was generally agreed.
Theft
can happen too, but apparently, you know, if you talked, as Lou's just said, off to the side, you have that with the Homeless Services Center now. And in terms of actual crucial issues like life-threatening situations, I don't think Dan Hopkins is way out of bounds when he came into city council. You remember him accusing the council of being murderers. He accused you of being a murderer, Kennedy of being a murderer. And, of course, the reason he says that is because, and I think it's a reasonable statement that he made, not so much necessarily personally attributing the murder to you, but the fact that the campground was dispersed made it a much more unsafe situation generally for people that winter in terms of, for example, their closeness to emergency services that were right there at the Homeless Services Center area, in terms of their access to health situations. So I mean, I think reasonably speaking, that's one of the concerns. But
the irony that somebody almost died in that campground?
Someone almost died.
Wouldn't that be the opposite?
But within a week. No, that's right. A woman had a drug overdose, but she didn't die. She almost died. Good point. But there were people who did die a week after you moved everybody out to the Brighton Beach campground. There was a person who did die of an overdose.
And there were people that died when the campground was open and people that have died afterwards.
I don't... I think we should look at those stats. I think that the claim that homeless activists have made to me, and that my understanding is that there were at least a dozen deaths in the 4 months that followed, and these are attributed to the fact that there was no campground for people to go to.
I don't believe that number. I think that's a gross exaggeration.
Okay, well, then we need to examine the statistics. We need to really look at over break. You got to come closer if you're going to talk, Lou.
In the last 2 months at the Homeless Resources Center, I know of 2 drug overdoses at the Homeless Resources Center.
Did people recover or die from those?
The paramedics was called, and one lady that did it herself told me that they told her that she was dead, and they brought her back, and she didn't have this change optional again.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's a good point, but to say these things don't happen anywhere, they do.
Well, there's a very
John Belushi is a great example of that.
There's a very
But here's the deal.
I'm trying to focus this on the magnet theory. This is what we're trying to talk about.
Well, I understand that, but we got to look at where the magnets are.
Okay.
All right. Now this has happened at the Homeless Resources Center right here, 115 Carl Street, and I know of one attack that started there, and the guy asked the people to call the police. And because the assault occurred there, and he was denied their assistance, which is their own rules there. If asked, they have to call the police. And I can show you where that's on the wall down in the bay. Yes, sir. All right. Now, they denied him calling in. He had just been kicked in the head and told him if he wanted to call, they took sides in this.
Can you address yourself to the proposal that you made?
Well, what I'm saying is the magnet theory is if it is such as this council member says, fine. If it is such as he says, you know, if you allow say 200 people to camp in an area of 2 miles, if you allow that. And you get 500 there, then stop it, because the magnet theory is real.
Okay.
All right.
I disagree with both of you on that.
Well, I don't care whether you disagree with me, but you know that's the start of dialogue is disagreement.
Indeed.
But what I'm saying is, if it's real, and the numbers prove it.
Oh, if it's real.
If it's real and the numbers prove it, then sure, shut it down.
I don't disagree with you.
I don't think
we really know.
As a theory is a theory until it's real.
But I think what we have to weigh here is
here's a great example.
I want to interrupt with something.
You know, there's many arguments against the civil rights.
Lou, wait a minute.
But history says that we had to progress in them.
There you go.
Yeah.
There is a possibility that if you had a sudden religious conversion, Mike, and agreed, okay, you know, we have a safety crisis here, we have to open up an area, we'll open up an area for the rest of the summer, and then we'll close it. Let's imagine that fantasy coming to fruition here. And I really believe if you made that choice, the council would go along with you immediately. There would be no hesitation in doing that if you brought such a proposal to city council. Unless, of course, you're talking about doing it in the downtown or something. And then, of course, you would have to be committed to a local institution. But I would go visit you every day, I want to let you know, and bring you croissant. But that's another question.
Robert, let me respond.
Well, but you can. But let me just finish the sentence. The sentence, in essence, is the proposal is you are weighing what happened 1 year at the Homeless Services Center in a situation where essentially homeless people organized and wouldn't move. That happened on November, I know, because I organized them. And I was out there on November 2nd when Paul Merceau said, well, everybody has to move. And we said, no, we're not moving and we're not dropping the tents. That's how we're going to stay. And we stayed, and there was a whole history behind that we're going to talk about at some other point. But that's a different situation than saying, let's open up a summer zone between June and September because we have a crisis of brutality against homeless people. I think, and don't you agree that, I mean, would you acknowledge there is some difference in those proposals?
Robert, this is how close we do.
Give me that.
This is how close we do come together on this issue. Yeah. And I've said this in public, and I've been consistent about it. I'm generally very welcoming and open to people coming to us and making very concrete proposals for things that they think will solve this problem. My own bias is that, you know, likely these things will be more successful indoors for a whole range of different reasons.
Indoors is fine.
But I'm not against the principle in some principled way, the idea that there might be some outdoor area where a campground could be established.
Under the freeways.
For example, I supported concretely the idea of using the state parks. We got
concrete. Let's get a concrete proposal right under the freeway.
We got shot down by the state parks department, but.
Well, that was kind of a get-them-out-of-town proposal, really. I mean, a lot
really
of people
was.
Thought
it was
cynical,
really looking.
You know?
We were looking for like a way that we could actually.
I know you were, but it had the get-them-out-of-town aura to
but
it.
But somebody needs to come forward and say that they've got a plan. Let's take Lou's suggestion.
Lou's got a plan. Lou's plan.
Some organization of people that's willing to actually like run this thing. It just, I mean, the idea that it just takes care of itself, I don't believe. We just may disagree about that. Maybe I don't know what Lou's views are about that. But there would be some group of people to come forward and say, we're going to be responsible for like organizing this thing. This is our plan for how we're going to deal with the situation. If in fact the magnet theory is correct and more people show up, this is how we'll try it. To not have it fail, we'll try and tell people don't. Not only is there not room for you here, but you need to go somewhere far away from here because otherwise surrounding this area in the areas where it's not legal to sleep will make the neighbors angry. It'll make the thing fail. They've got to have a plan for what do you do with the overflow. They've got to have a plan for how they're going to deal with sanitation questions. They've got to have a plan for how they're going to deal with the neighbors and whatever their concerns might be. And if in fact somebody comes forward with a plan like that, and it's a rational plan, I will be probably one of the first supporters of that plan, if it makes sense. And I've said that over and over again.
Yes, you have.
The problem is, and I mean it. And my hope is
that would you like to sit down with some people and work out such a plan? Or
Robert, I have two full-time jobs, okay? Two full-time jobs, at least.
And one of them is a city council member.
One of them is the welfare of homeless people. I work at the university, a range of different things. And I think that what we need to get is if Lou or somebody else wants to come forward with a proposal, let them make that proposal, let the city council consider it, and I don't think you'll find me as somebody who's abstractly opposed to those things, and then we'll test your theory. The idea we're just going to let people sleep in the woods, and we'll see whether it brings a lot of people, is not something that I can support at this point.
You're on the air with Councilmember Rutkin.
How will we hear it? Well, it's about time. This is Linda, and I have a plan, and it wouldn't even cost a hell of a lot. We could even pay a living wage and it wouldn't cost a lot. And we wouldn't need any new people for it. And everyone involved in this problem of killing off our citizens would get to feel like part of a solution. I think we should just hire back the rangers that work for City Parks and Recs for nighttime and just declare a moratorium on anything that criminalizes.
I'm sorry, can you say again, hire back who?
I'm not finished.
I just couldn't hear what you were saying. Hire back who,
I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. The park rangers that work for Parks and Rec that it used to.
Thank you.
I heard recently that we don't even have rangers at night. But we have the police flushing people out, especially downtown at night, you know. Just putting a little more balance like we used to have would save some lives. And I don't think it's important to figure out how many, but it would be a solution. And the problem of not having enough places for everyone, including our tourists who are paying the motel tax, everyone is to have not. I'd like to see the porta potties evolve into real stations like we used to have at the Coconut Grove, with people there who are courteous and welcoming to visitors as well as ourselves. That wouldn't be so hard. I don't think it'll cost any more plumbing. You know, anywhere along the way.
So
it would be changing how we think about things.
Can you re-summarize this plan for me? I'm a little unclear on it.
This is sort of just a broad safety net plan,
mm-hmm.
And I think it's critical. If anyone has died because they're out in the weather, let alone the traffic or getting hit by thugs, this would resolve that. Put back the jobs that used to be city-paid Parks and Rec employees, the park rangers, give them the tools they need to take proper care of their horses, give them a directive like they used to have to be friendly. You know, the bigger part of our economy is tourism.
So your plan for helping in terms of increasing shelter space is to have the park rangers be friendlier?
I thought you were talking about campsites, too. I don't consider shelter space because that's something that's quantified and bureaucratized and unfortunately paid back from taxpayers instead of dealt with directly. I think sheltering should be a local endeavor and it should be totally legal and incentives, but that's not the part I'm talking about, and that would cost a little money. What I'm talking about is just making it safe to be asleep at night, safe. Just forget about whether it's legal or not legal, or how legal it is,
how many days
you can park on somebody's front yard.
How would this be done?
I'm saying there was a time when instead of having thugs running around in the woods, we had park rangers. And that was because of city funding.
But under Norman Levy, the park rangers were thugs. But that's not the story.
There have been times when the park rangers seem as ugly as our policemen sometimes seem. And on all of those times, there needs to be a lot more public dialogue. But that's another issue, too. What I want to say here is it would cost very little and no new money to make it safe to be outside in the wilderness, not neighborhood, uncrowded parts of the city. And if we're going to call them parks and pay for taxpayer money in them, they ought to have facilities in them.
So you're suggesting we put, say, facilities in a part of the Pogonip or a part of, are you saying, I guess,
in
part
a part of
West,
every
or?
Wilderness where people wander, or they drive their bikes, or ride their horses, or play croquet. In every place where we want people to feel welcome, to whatever degree, there should be public facilities, just like at San Lorenzo Park.
So you suggest suspending the sleeping ban in some of these parks?
No, I'm saying just don't enforce it.
Don't enforce it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't feel like bickering about how much law is going to take away somebody's need and right in America to survive. That's not what I'm talking about. I want to just focus on letting people camp. You know, if there's any truth to your position, Robert, that people are self-maintaining when given the opportunity, I hope I didn't recap that too badly, but if we can take care of ourselves and each other, there's certainly the open spaces in which it should be allowed like it was before. And people, supposedly, this is what I've heard from campers, from families, from picnickers, that the park rangers are nice and they'll help you figure out your way around if you're not from here.
Let me ask you about the magnet theory, because we're kind of going at the sleeping ban in a number of issues, and Mike has only about 7 or 8 more minutes left until he returns, of course, for part two of this this marathon.
I didn't mean to take up so much energy.
No, that's fine. I just wonder, while you're here, can you any reactions to the discussion we've been having about the magnet theory? Mike is concerned that there would be a repetition of 1995. He says he feels he needs a concrete proposal. He wants there to be, you know, a series of someone who's a specific caretaker. How would your plan deal with these concerns he has?
I agree with most of that. I think there's all kinds of levels, and many of them are organizable, and many of them are self-organizing, that people can take care of themselves and each other on. And I don't think how thick the walls of the structure is a real relevant thing either. I remember the hang-up over at River Street Shelter just because of a stove vent.
A stove vent kept
the place shut for an extra 6 weeks. You know, that can happen, and especially when we lose focus on what our goal is here. You know, we don't have to have a pro-busting fantasy world every 7 years in order to remind each other that we're human.
Well, thank you, Linda. Can you take your answer on the air? Mike has probably got some response.
I just think
to what
it's a good proposal, and I don't mean to say it's all inclusive.
Sure.
Would
you be willing to volunteer to help? Lou asks.
She's
disabled, you should be aware.
Yeah, I do. I help a lot, usually working off tickets. I feel like I've been dedicated the last 2 years mostly to trying to help wayfaring families, and some of them come through our town. And they shouldn't get stranded here just because they can't park while they're looking for a car park. If they can be self-supporting, I don't think they should be discouraged. I also try to educate people who think that water and utilities are a free ride, too. I think we have all those responsibilities, each of us.
Well, thank you, Linda, and
thanks for calling in, Linda.
Tune in next week, or actually in 2 weeks, if you want to catch Mike when he comes in again.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
So, Mike, any reaction to that? Don't feel obliged. We only have about 4 minutes left. I'm going to try to get out so Dennis here can do his excellent Earth First show, which is coming right up. In fact, I recommend you stay and pick up some tips from the old master here. He works the board much better than I do, and he seems to have a show much better prepared than I do.
Robert, Lou wants to know.
Yes.
And I'll ask it for him, because I guess I do too.
Yes.
Would you be willing to help with that kind of a camping area? Or do you think that your calling is in some other place?
I It depends on what kind of help you mean. If you mean to clean up the toilets, that sort of thing.
Well, I'm trying to push you to help educate people about their responsibilities to
sure.
clean up after
as a matter of fact, I would like to see the city institute a course on how to camp properly. I think that would be a very, I'd like to see such a course, if it were funded, or even not even funded, if it were organized. I think people would be willing to throw seminars on how to environmentally respect the land, maybe even with self-defense seminars. I would help put out flyers for that.
I guess the short answer to both Linda's proposal, and it deserves further consideration, so I don't want to dismiss it here in the 3 minutes I have left to talk about
mm-hmm.
it.
Two and a half.
2 minutes or whatever, give you some mm-hmm. time to get the last word. Mm-hmm. But the basically, that we do live in an urban society, it's overpopulated at this point, and the idea that somehow we in any way would be capable of providing people with enough space to sleep in the wilderness areas, that we've experienced that. The situation that existed before in the Poganip, when people slept out there when there was not enforcement against sleeping there, which existed for quite a while, or at least not regular or systematic enforcement, people thrashed the place. I mean, I've done a lot of hiking in the Poganip myself, and you walk around, and even still, you'll see these areas that were, deeply scarred by people just living, terribly. Now, some people live lightly on the land. I know I've got both students and friends and other folks who are homeless who sleep up behind Porter College and other places, and nobody would ever know they're there. They roll their stuff up during the day, they put it away under a tree, they bury it under leaves, whatever, and they've been there for years, and nobody, it never causes anybody a problem because nobody knows about it. But in the Poganip, where you had sort of saying to people, come on down, this is a place where it's okay to sleep, this is the safe area, if there's not some kind of management of the process, people will thrash the woods, the danger of fire, again, the mess that's there. Even if you provide people with restrooms, just people dragged mattresses, they constructed sort of semi-cardboard villages in there and stuff, and I think people really think that the Poganip should be a place that everybody who lives in town, including the homeless, should be able to walk around during the day and enjoy the place and not feel that you're walking through somebody's bedroom.
Well,
I think that's the problem.
I encourage you to keep considering it, because
let me give you the last word. You got about a minute and a half left.
It's not even the last word. I'm just trying to get a couple announcements, and you're going to get more words, and you're going to have plenty of time, and really, I'm going to, I don't think you probably feel like you've gotten some words in this time, Mike, I hope.
I feel you were a completely gracious host this evening, and I was, not understood.
I'm
going
to try to change that next time, everybody, for all you who are bored to death with this love fest here. My problem, Mike, is I often hear the same stuff from you, and maybe you hear the same stuff from me. Yeah, I imagine. But, I think we have a crisis here, immediate crisis. I think that the Homeless Services Center agrees there's a crisis. And I really, it's not like I want to... Throwing a lot of blame at you, I know, is... I'm going to do it anyway, because you're on the city council, and I think you have the responsibility to respond to this crisis. And I think that you are in a unique position to do that. And I don't think I can schmooze you into it, really, because I think you have a very strong position. I think you believe what you believe. I think at some point I'd like to do a psychological analysis of why you believe what you believe. But that'll come, hopefully, in the time ahead. Perhaps not. Perhaps a sexual psychoanalysis of your...
Stick to the issues. Stick,
indeed. Hey, man, we're gonna bring in some babes to check out. Well, that's another story. But in any case, you have been listening to Michael Rotkin, Lou Rice, and your very own Robert Norris talking on Bathurst Spears Broadsides, beginning a discussion of some of the issues around why can't the city council protect its homeless people? And the answer is because it's not suitable for an urban environment. And bring me a proposal, and I'll look at it, and I'll be back in 2 weeks. But Mike is going to be around for the next... Well, he's going to be around tomorrow. He has a phone number at City Council, and I'm sure he's eager to hear your thoughts and ideas.
420-5020,
and then push the... There's a number you push after that. Yeah, it'll tell you what to do. Not that necessarily is going to make much difference. But in any case, I want to thank Mike for coming in here. He takes flack where people like Councilmember Keith Sugar, who is much more closely aligned with my position on this, just will not. And Mike is just more confident with these things. Now, if we can just break through some of Mike's bullshit, we are going to get to the core of this guy and get that conscience activated. So give Mike a call at 420-5020. Give him your proposals about what to do in this crisis. And I'm past my time. I want to thank you for staying with me. I want to thank Dennis for his patience. Please, tomorrow, Sam Farr's office, 2 o'clock, Stevenson, UCSC. Let's stop the bombing. Let's get there and tell that man Farr he's just done too much pro-war activity. We've got to stop it now. Come back to my show, 11 o'clock on Sunday. I'll be back with you again with another edition of Bathrob Spears Broadsides. Spears Broadsides for today, and we'll just do a little on-the-air station cleanup here. You're listening to 96.3 Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm Uncle Dennis, and we're about to get started here, so hang in for Earth First Radio. We'll be checking our levels and making sure everything is really cool. So, all right, that looks good there. So stay tuned for Earth First Radio. Earth First Radio, I'm Uncle Dennis. Stay tuned for No Compromise news, views, poetry, and music from the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Here come chainsaws killing the trees, something everything that lives in peace. Our animal friends are on